Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, friends. This season, we are bringing you the story of Charles and Jennifer Cha. This is episode 4, Evidence. As well as myself and Wendy, throughout this season, you will also hear from retired detective Alan Fox and retired detective Ron Dreher.
I'm Alan Fox. I live in Reno, Nevada, and I'm retired from law enforcement for over 30 years. I've worked robbery homicide for 10 years.
My name is Ron Dreher. I went to work for Reno on March 15, 1973. And then I retired on July 23, 1999.
We have been asked to cover this case by Alan and Ron to see if anyone remembers anything about Charles and Jennifer. Always remember, however insignificant something might seem to you, it may be a vital piece of evidence that helps the police to work out what happened. So if you have any information at all, please do come forward. You can contact Reno Police directly, or if you prefer to stay anonymous, you can contact us and we will pass on the information for you. This is a very sad case about two young children who went missing in 1989 and whose bodies were not discovered until the following year. This is a murder case that has never been solved. And please note that while we are not including graphic details in this series, we are dealing with children, so this may not be suitable for all listeners.
In episode 1, we heard how Charles and Jennifer Cha went missing after leaving school on the 18th of October, 1989. How their mother Anne was away in Taiwan, and their grandmother was looking after them. In episode 2, we looked at the circumstances around their disappearance. And in episode 3, the remains of Charles and Jennifer were found. In this final episode of the series, we will be going through the evidence and facts that are known, and other circumstances that may be relevant to the case, just in case it triggers anyone's memory. The original investigation was for a case of two missing children, rather than homicide. So the checks that were carried out were different, and there are lots of holes that were not filled. We also have to remember that the way that cases were looked at, the training that the police had, and the methods available to them have changed considerably since Charles and Jennifer went missing in 1989.
Let's start with what we know about the family.
Before the kids were born in Reno, Nevada, the mother and father came from Taiwan. And they worked their way through, I believe, San Francisco. It may have been L.A., but they eventually find themselves living in Reno and opening a Chinese restaurant back. The children were born in the early 80s. The mother and father eventually were divorced sometime before the children were abducted. It wasn't necessarily a contentious divorce, but there were some issues, as would be in any family that probably had problems. It was alleged that the father had a gambling and drinking problem. After the divorce, he moved to Los Angeles, and the mother stayed and continued the restaurant called Imperial Palace on East 2nd Street in Reno, right across from Harris was at 2nd and Center Street. The mother had traveled to Taiwan for 2 weeks, and the grandmother was taking care of the kids and made sure they got off to school, got their piano lessons and violin lessons and so forth.
Where's Gordon Cha? Where is he? And we know that he contacted those children the day before, the day of the earthquake. He talked to them. We know that. as far as him contacting them, as far as I know, he's contacting them to find out about the earthquake. That's what we're thinking. That's what we think to this day. Why else would you contact him? What those children said, what dad said to the children, we don't know, because you can only suspect that he made some comment to them about the next day. Whether he was going to fly up here, because we know that he was in L.A., we don't know. But we do know that he talked to them. That's what we know.
So Gordon, the children's father, had spoken to Charles and Jennifer the day before they disappeared. This was the day of the earthquake. Nobody knows if he was checking in on them or if he said something else. And Grandma, who didn't speak English, was never interviewed and is now deceased. So we will never know. Gordon was interviewed by the police numerous times and passed two polygraph tests. Though, of course, many believe that these do not prove anything. The next point is timing. Charles and Jennifer went missing the day before their mother, Anne, was returning from her trip to Taiwan. We do not know if their abduction was planned deliberately while she was away, or if it was a coincidence. Anne did not learn of her children's disappearance until she arrived home. She told the Reno Gazette Journal how she felt when she found out.
Quote, "It was shocking. At the time, I could not think. I was so sad and mad, and it was painful." End quote.
When Anne returned to her restaurant, the Imperial Palace, she discovered that a man called Grooms had phoned and talked to one of her employees. She waited at the restaurant for him to call back, where he said he would return them for $100,000. Anne was desperate to get Charles and Jennifer back and tried to get the money together, but Grooms never called back. She said this about the incident.
Quote, "Even if I didn't have the money, I would try. I would give every penny, everything I have, if I could save my kids' lives, but it never happened." End quote.
The guy by the name of James Grooms calls in a ransom demand for the children. And to understand James Grooms, he hangs out in different kinds of bars.
G-R,
just like it sounds, G-R-O-O-M-S. He's very manipulative. He's always looking to make money. He's always looking for a scam. He talks like he's tougher than he is, and he doesn't. So he makes a ransom demand anyway from his apartment. He makes another phone call from the apartment next door. It feels like he's making this up as he goes along. Whoops, I called from my apartment. Maybe I shouldn't do that. And so he calls from next door. They identify him fairly quickly with a phone trap and trace, and he's brought in quick. He's interviewed extensively. He's leaned on really hard. He says, look, the long and short of it is, it was just an opportunity. He didn't know. He claims he doesn't know where the kids are. He hasn't harmed them. But all of these other extraneous facts start coming into detectives' minds. He's married to a girl who is Asian. His kids look Asian. There's reports from friends that he's molested his kids, and that somehow they're trying to make that connect to Jennifer and Charles being Asian and actually Taiwanese, Chinese, in the minds of the, and you can understand why. You got to follow these trails, but you follow them till they end. And they leaned on Grooms. They eventually charge him with extortion, but that's all they could get. They can't prove he took the kids.
So Grooms was a suspect. He definitely tried to extort money from Anne and went to prison for this. And he did once live very close to the site where the children were buried. But did he abduct Charles and Jennifer? There were two other suspects too, who have been looked at over the years. The police have looked into other child murderers or abductions in the vicinity to see if there are any common grounds or factors that might link them.
But then we noticed a lot of other people who they started looking at had associations with that area. And they started looking at certain people who had associations with that area who were sex offenders. And so eventually there's just so many people associated with that area. When you're looking for a red and purple truck, you see a lot of them. But if you're not looking for it, you don't notice it. So you go, that can't be a coincidence. And there probably aren't many red and purple trucks. But my point is, you're looking for a specific truck that you never noticed before. And now you think, well, that can't be a coincidence. It is. A lot of things get by us that we don't notice until we're looking for it. So during that, the entire investigation, people associated with, he's not the only suspect. If I brought you one suspect at a time, and you'd say, oh, he did it. And then I'd say, but what about this? Oh, yeah, he did it. And then you're going down these rabbit holes. And now who are you stuck with? And that's why I say you got stuff you could prove in court. These are facts we got to prove. We can't just go with speculation. And it's a particular mindset that not necessarily everybody who understands philosophy understands the premises and the conclusion, because they still let superfluous junk in their minds and then create them in the facts.
To date, no connections have been made, but Alan and Ron are still working the case as we speak. They are going to go back through all of the evidence that is available, checking all statements, speaking to people who are still alive who may have information, and investigating every lead.
There was some evidence from the scene that we are able to disclose. You heard Alan speak previously about the shovel that was found less than 80 feet from Charles and Jennifer's burial site. Now, it could just be a coincidence that there was a shovel near the site. It could be that it was left there by somebody else before or after the murders. Or it could be relevant. Do you know anything about a shovel in that area? Perhaps you left it there or saw it there. A couple of different vehicles were possibly also seen in the area of the burial site, but none have been conclusively linked to the abduction and murder of Charles and Jennifer.
We have cars that this brown van with the Miller gear shift knob becomes a... It always has intrigued me to be able to see that there is a brown van, a panel van with a mirror Miller highlight gear shift. And we've leaked that and put that information out for years, and nobody's ever picked up on that. And here we have hot August nights. We have all kinds of things here for old cars. You would think that somebody somewhere would come up with that. Because something like that makes sense. Something you could back in there makes sense. But I'm referring to a van was spotted at the gravesite, backed in there. That's what we know. Okay. The person that got that, they gave that interview, gave it to Plumas County. Like the Miss Picky lunchbox, that information became unfounded, not unfounded, but... We can't find that, so we can go back to the people there and say, okay, what did you see? All of the things that we needed to see.
And you're saying it was backed up to the spot where...
As best as we know, yes.
Is that van sighting, is that the vehicle that matched similar to what Grooms drove?
No.
Okay,
Grooms different. Had a, I'll show you a picture of it.
Yeah, because I remember, I thought that I read in a newspaper there was a tip that came in about a vehicle that matched his.
This is the thing, the Volkswagen, this car, this thing. This is what we're talking about. This is Grooms' car, or something
okay.
That looks like that.
So that's completely different from the van.
Yeah, a Volkswagen back then, this has never been found, okay? But even if it were to find it, I mean, it would probably still have stuff about it. We think it's been destroyed. And this, we had a VIN number, we had a car. As a matter of fact, a couple years ago, we had a press release on that. I had some people call me and finding a van, just a Volkswagen like that. But we had the plate, we had the VIN number, we had all of the things that we need. And as it turned out, these people were really hanked up. But after we got the information, it wasn't the same car. But you don't know. People say,
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Did you see any suspicious people or vehicles in the area of Anderson Elementary School or the Redfield apartment complex on October the 18th, 1989? Or perhaps you saw something in Portola near where the children's remains were found? Of course, since the murder in 1989, technology has advanced considerably, and we now have DNA. Many, many cold cases have been solved recently due to DNA evidence, and we hope that funds can be raised to get some of the evidence collected in Charles and Jennifer's case tested. Maybe this will provide the breakthrough that the case needs. We have some closing comments from Alan and Ron.
It's not lost on me that they were abducted the day before Mom was due to come home. Yeah, and when you add up all the probabilities, there's a high probability the kids knew the person. There's a high probability the person knew Mom was coming home soon. So did something happen to the kids while Mom was gone and suddenly they knew they could communicate with Mom better than Grandma and that was going to be told? Or was this a chance that I could, that before Mom gets home and gets better control, this is my last chance to get the kids? Or is, like I said, there's no shortage of variables, but as you add everything up, you get a higher probability of one of the situation. Probably knew the kids. And I'm not saying they did. This could be a stranger abduction and I want the boy or I want the girl, but I gotta take both.
We asked Alan if Grooms has been ruled out as a suspect.
Grooms admitted to being in the restaurant and he did have a menu from the restaurant at his house. But he spent a lot of time downtown in all the bars. Did he have other menus? I don't know. But I think once he saw that the kids were the kids of the person who owned the Imperial Palace and he's thinking of doing this, he walks in there, maybe has something to eat, look around, he's always thinking. The thing about Grooms is he's terrible at everything he does. He gets caught every single time. And it doesn't mean he didn't get lucky, but we have to keep him in mind. We can never forget about him, but he would have had something. It's possible that he didn't. Even defense attorneys I know who represented Grooms for all kinds of things say he was bad at everything he did. He got caught.
He left a trail.
Yeah. He was aggressive with committing crimes, but he was stupid. He was really bad at it. Doesn't mean he didn't do it. He's not totally eliminated. We prioritize our leads and then we follow him that way. He's not my favorite suspect. His father was a mean SOB. And his father can't pin him down for being in town, but his father was mean, was a sociopath, who a drunk, mean person. And while he was in prison, he talks to his father on the phone, and his father's living with his kids for a short time. His kids got taken away from him because it was alleged that he had molested them. But that's where we draw all of these conclusions and come to these speculations, and that's where we find coincidences. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not a fan of coincidences. Some people are eliminated with polygraphs, and to me, polygraphs in my cases only confuse things.
Is there any part of the investigation or what you worked on that you think's important for us or anyone who would hear the story that we should know about, or any information like the van that people should hear, and if they were to know something that they should say something about?
There's all kind of stuff. Obviously, I'm sure Alan told you about the pickup that was up there with the white male with the long blonde hair that tried to kidnap a couple kids off a school bus not too long before the kidnapping of the Chalk kids.
Where was this?
In Beckwith. And you're at Blairsden. Blairsden's here. Beckwith is back, prior to going into Portola.
Is this in California? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the spot that I was thinking about.
Yeah,
and but I thought that was a van for some reason.
A guy comes out, has a gun. There was a store there at once. It's not there anymore. But two kids get off a boy and a girl get off the school bus. This guy tries to get him in his truck. Another one of those leads that becomes very significant that we don't have any information on. But that's something that's very crucial in this case because they get a boy and a girl. Even though they're not Asian, it's a boy and a girl. They're on a school bus. Similarities. That's what you're looking at. Still, why two Asian kids? Why these two kids? I mean, we've had all kind of things. We've had the Chinese mafia. We've had this, that. We've had gambling deaths. You name it, a variety of leads. I've got leads in here that are unbelievable.
Aliens, I'm sure.
That culminate in all those boxes that you saw, putting these things together and knowing that the case is solvable. What Alan's doing is going through that case and he's looking at it as you would taking a magnifying glass to something and saying, okay, what's there? What can we go back? That question you asked, what's the most significant thing? And cold cases like this, and it's cold, but it's not, because we've worked this case forever. You sit there and looking at what can you find that will tie something into this.
Ron tells us what he thinks of the burial site.
Last time we were up there several weeks ago, there was snow on the ground still, and I don't know if it was still there, but it was ice and snow, and you couldn't even move down there. But you slid down the hill. It was just as steep, but it was a different terrain because you didn't have the trees and the like that had fallen down. Mm. Somebody knew that area. Somebody wouldn't just pick that out. Somebody knew that they could get down there and bury two kids.
Without being seen.
Or being seen and not care because you can't see anybody if you're down there.
And Ron's final words.
Somebody knew those kids.
Right.
In my opinion, they didn't get in that car with anybody that they didn't know. Somebody knew them. Let me tell you that. Somebody knew those two children.
Thank you for listening to episode 4, our final episode of our series, The Chaw Children. If you have any information on Charles and Jennifer Chaw, please contact Reno Police Department. Or if you would prefer to remain anonymous, you can contact us through our website, itsfoulplay.com. Thank you for listening.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.